Black Type Thoroughbreds is a new thoroughbred racing partnership that gives you the chance to get in the game. Not many of us have the money to buy our own professional sports franchise, but you can have a somewhat similar experience in the world of thoroughbred racing with a partnership like Black Type. Black Type's deep connections in the industry mean you're going to get top-level access to the best horsemen and horses. It's a great way to get involved. People are always asking me what they can do to learn more about ownership. Being involved in a partnership like Black Type that has a low markup and great people involved like Jake Ballas is the best way, I can tell you, to get involved as a thoroughbred owner. For more information, you can reach out to Jake directly and check out the information on his website. That web address is blacktypetb.com. You're listening to the In the Money Players Podcast. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you on this December 6th, 2019. Unbelievably, coming up on this show's first anniversary. Pretty exciting for us. A lot of great stuff has happened this year that we could not have anticipated, and we're very grateful, especially, there's a reason I thank all of you, the listeners, at the end of every show. You make what we do possible. A little bit different show today. We're breaking format. We're going to be a little bit lean and mean. There's a lot of stuff going on. I'm still waiting for my new sound equipment to arrive, so we're going a little bit lo-fi today, but hopefully the content will still be very highbrow. We've got our usual co-host. He'll be coming in a minute. But first, I want to introduce a special guest. We talk about him all the time on the show. He's been a guest several times as well. And he is, I think we've decided, and we'll confirm this momentarily, we've decided that he is the second youngest person to ever qualify for the NHC five times, which is pretty impressive still in and of itself. I'm talking about a man who also doubles as my running coach, Coach Eric Bylick. Eric, how are you today?
I'm excellent. You guys flatter me sometimes.
Well, you know, when JK tries math and fails, Eric, somebody's got to bail him out. That somebody is usually you.
I hear you. Yeah. Sometimes Jonathan, big day of racing, like, hey, I need help with this. I'm like, all right, I think I can help you. Just give me a sec. Well, it's expected on big days now.
Let's start off by doing a little bit of fact checking. Is that right? Are you the youngest, or did Pat Stitch get five NHC qualifications before you?
Pat Stitch has me.
Best part about that is you're not only not the youngest five-time NHC qualifier, you're not even the youngest five-time NHC qualifier who spent a lot of his life in Chicago. But still, that's not a bad group to be in. How old are you at this point? I lose track.
I'm 28.
That's not bad, man. That's not bad at all. I have a feeling a young man named Carson Matisse may end up beating both of you in about 5 years, but we'll have to see how that goes. Is he eligible? Is Carson Matisse eligible this year, or will next year be the first year he's eligible?
Next year, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So you've got 5 years to enjoy being second, and then you'll probably get bounced to third, would be my guess in the way that these things work. But tell us the story very quickly, because I know we don't have a ton of time today, but I do want to hear the story of the other day from Hawthorne. I know you've been a big advocate for them for a long time. How did you decide to play? It was not your usual situation where you studied for a couple of days and showed up there bright and early, was it?
No. So I moved to Minnesota a couple years ago from Chicago, so I always pretty much played in the Hawthorne tournaments there. That's how I got my start in contest play, kind of as a byproduct of just going there for the Breeders' Cup one day. And qualified there for my first year, third year. So I've been in the NHC 2014, 15, 16, 17, missed 18 and 19, 17 Thanksgiving and 18 Thanksgiving with my girlfriend's family and friends. So I didn't have the opportunity that year. But this year, we go to my parents' house in Chicago for Thanksgiving. And our plan was to go head down to the city. They live in the suburbs. We can go down to the city for the day and go out to dinner with some friends. And then the next day, wake up and watch college football all day. So I was looking at Thursday and Friday, I was studying for Friday, trying to figure out what I wanted to play in tournament. My plan was to go play a pick five at Del Mar and just make the bet, leave. hopefully I wouldn't come back collect. We ended up not going to Hawthorne on Friday. Ended up going out to some bars and restaurants in Chicago and got really, really drunk on scotch. excellent scotch ball card drum bar in Chicago. It's kind of a rooftop situation.
I'll have to check it out. It sounds cold.
It wasn't. It's on a rooftop, but at this point of the year, it's closed in. But excellent scotch menu. So we were there. Woke up 10 in the morning. I'm like, oh, I know I shouldn't swear there. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll edit it.
All right. Wake up 10 in the morning. Like, man, we got an hour to football. And so I'm pretty miserable. Like, need to eat something. Head over to our friend's house, and I'm an absolute slob during the Ohio State Michigan game. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, I want to get to Hawthorne at some point today. So I'm just looking at all the races, super hungover on the couch. It was kind of nice. My girlfriend, name's Jebs. Well, she likes racing sometimes. Sometimes she gives me a hard time about it, but it was kind of nice because we were sitting there watching football and she wasn't bothering me to do stuff like what would normally happen when we're at home. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, I'm going to play the Del Mar pick six because there's a two or three day carryover, whatever it was. I'm like, it was a $500 buy-in for the Hawthorne contest. I'm like, I'll buy and do that. But my big opinion of the day was Chad Brown, whatever male turf stakes it was, one that was won by Next Shares. That was one opinion. The other one was the some Mandela horse in the last leg. I'm like, I really like that horse. It's a off the turf race, and I like off the turf racing. And I ended up not making the pick six in time. My friend stayed at the house. Girlfriend stayed at my friend's house. Drove to Hawthorne by myself. Pretty much just bet this last Del Mar race, make one big shot and leave. And ended up betting five races, churned through a bunch of money, and ended up getting fifth of sixth place, which all qualified for the NHC. So
let me get this straight. You didn't even show up. People have been there since 10 in the morning. You roll in at 5 o'clock, make three bets.
$550. I bet the last five races of the contest. And I bet four of the races pretty hard, and I hit every one of those races I bet pretty hard. Granted, it was pretty spready and pretty favorite. They ran favorites, but it was a pretty good little hour of betting for me.
What type of wagers were you making? What pools were you in?
Exacta and trifecta.
Gotcha. So you were like keying a horse and then filling in a spready way, that kind of thing?
Some places were spready, some places not, but it was a pretty good probably, I think my record for amount bet and the amount of time I was there, for sure.
Well, we've missed you at the NHC the last couple of years. We're glad to have you back where you belong in 2020 out at Bally's, and congratulations on that. We're going to keep you around, Eric. We're going to make you do double duty. We're going to make you talk about this mandatory payout pick six at Aqueduct on Saturday. We'll get you back for a longer visit soon. There was plenty of stuff to unpack just in what you gave us there, like why you like the off-turf races and, you know, getting a little bit more into your betting philosophy and other things. So we'll bring you back for that at some point over the winter. But now we're going to have you talk about this pick six. And to join us will be the regular host of this show. I think he's gotten his breakfast eaten. He's gone to the washroom. He's done all those things that he needed to do this morning. I'm talking, of course, about the People's Champion, Jonathan Kinchin. JK, what's up?
Well, man, EB had an exciting weekend, it sounds like. A little little hangover, a little gambling. I'm sure his parents are proud.
EB, before we dive into this, I do need to ask, what type of scotch were you drinking, or were you sort of sampling the entire northern third of the island?
So my girlfriend and I, we met at a wedding, and that couple lives in Scotland now. So we've been over there twice to visit them. And one of the distilleries we went to was Old Pulteney.
Oh, that's great. They're great. Way up in the islands on the coast, right?
Yep. We did the North Coast 500 last year as our trip. Amazing trip. Super, super great scenery. Not that crazy up there. But Old Pulteney actually has their 21-year scotch back in 2012 was rated the number one scotch that some guy does scotch tasting every year. It was the highest rating he ever gave a scotch before. And it was released in 2012, and it's pretty hard to find bottles now. But
it's out of circulation. You can't find the 21 anymore from what I understand.
And so they had a couple bottles there, so I had a couple of those. And
enough said. If I could get my hands on that stuff, I would probably not be feeling my best self the next day, too. JK, you did not make it to Hawthorne this year, but it's typically a stop on your dance card. Just life got in the way?
Yeah, just it was a life thing. I mean, I usually, there's been a couple of Hawthorne contests where I've flown up day of and left day of. Actually, I think Eric might have helped me a couple times. Eric was instrumental in my NHC tour win when he picked me up from the airport. We went to the OTB. We placed the pick five wager on Arlington Million Day. Then we went to the Million, and then took me back to collect the money. And so that Eric was instrumental in that one. And I think there's another one where I actually landed, Ubered to Hawthorne, went all in like the late pick five at Churchill with a carryover or something. Ubered back to the airport, watched it on the flight on the way home. Like it's a great contest for flexibility, that's for sure.
Here's a down the rabbit hole gag. JK, to whom do you give more credit for the win at Arlington that day, EB or the Arlington stewards?
That's close. That's a close one. That's a photo finish. But I think I'm going to give that one to the stewards.
I watch Chicago racing all year round, and I'll tell you this much, that I think the Chicago stewards will have probably one of the higher takedown rates in the United States, but they're pretty consistent. There's not a lot of guessing with them.
Well, that's indubitably a good thing, that latter part of it. We got to troll so many people there. Rafe Beckett, Benny Southstreet, Tommy Massis. I know they listen from time to time, and they just love it when we bring up your 2015 NHC Tour win, JK. We could have fun and talk about silliness for an hour, but unfortunately, this whole show, we only have half an hour, which means we only have 20 minutes left, and we've got six races to talk about, but I think we can get through them rather quickly. Not that they're not complicated, but we'll just, you know, stick to our top line opinions here. And things kick off in this pick six with race number five on Saturday. It is, remember, the Empire mandatory payout. So we're looking at a reduced takeout situation at Aqueduct in this pick six. Kicks off with this maiden race. EB, as our special guest, we'll start with you.
I think it's a hard race because you have a lot of horses going from two turns at a 9 furlong distance back to a one turn mile. With that said, I'm not a big Chad Brown fan on the dirt, but default rate seems interesting here on the stretch out. Has figures that suggest he might like going a little farther at the one turn, and the other horse I like is Mischief Afoot, Jimmy Toner. I think the horse will probably appreciate one turn more than the two turns. Had a good effort two times back. I think those are both interesting. The one probably of note here is Orphis, the 9, the Mark Hendick Firster, is out of Grace Hall, so a pretty good mare there. But I'll probably stick to Mischief Afoot and default rate here.
JK, how do you see this one?
Yeah, I mean, for the sake of time, I mean, I'm not going to add too much. I mean, I think those two make the most sense. Default rate and Mischief Afoot are two that you have to use. I think maybe it was on an Irish show we did a couple weeks ago, but I had mentioned a horse by the name of Tappage down towards the inside, the two horse for Godolphin in Kieran. And I remember being up in Saratoga and Kieran talking about, through the grapevine about how he liked this one. But this was going to be a horse that needed to kind of grow up a little bit. So fourth career start. Seems to be growing up in terms of time, but the performances haven't seemed to really, the light hasn't turned on yet. So I'll give that one another shot. Type I'll probably use like a B horse, C horse type, just because the other two are going to take so much money. There'll be a lot of value if Tappage can wake up and actually get the job done. So I'll give Tappage another opportunity here. Putting the blinkers on, that's something, you know, when you're looking for a change, you're looking for an improvement, you're looking for a horse to live up to what you might have heard the horse was supposed to be, an equipment change, a surface change, or distance change, or things that could all come into play. And he's going to, you know, get the cut back from 9 to the flat one-turn mile and adding the blinkers. Maybe that'll wake him up.
You covered everything I was going to say about Tappage, with the exception of, and this is just a good example, I think, for folks who think that these maiden races are all about inside information and hearing what JK heard about Tappage at Saratoga. I hadn't heard any of that, but I intuited it from how hammered this horse was at the windows in the last start. And I was very interested in the cutback and the adding the blinkers, just knowing that, that the way this horse was bet indicates the talent. You don't need to hear the backstretch whispers, folks, because money talks most of the time in this game. And right. that default rate for me just looked like one who could end up being tough on the lead. And I like the fact that Secret Rules came back to win. I think this one needs to make some improvement on the figure scale, but the pace scenario should allow for it. Did you have one more thing on this one, JK, before we move it along?
Yeah, the Mark Hennig first, and I'll keep it. It's the first leg. So, and if for timing purposes, I'll take a look at the double pools leading into this race so that you have more time to kind of formulate your ticket. But see if the nine, I'm guessing, what is that, Orphis? I don't know. See if that horse is being bet. If the horse is being bet, I would include there, and I would just use if the horse is 4-1 or less, I would probably use that horse as an A horse. If the horse is a little bit colder on the board, maybe use as a saver. And then first line on the outside, the Noda brothers have been dangerous in New York from time to time this summer. 22%, I think, at the meet so far for the year. 19%. They've only had three first time starters and none of them have even hit the board, but they're sneaky on big days. If you're looking for an opportunity to scoop the whole pool, the Noda brothers beating Chad and Shug and Bill Mott in the first leg is one way to get that done.
Interesting point. And this is a situation normally I say, oh, well, I don't mind going a little skinnier in the first leg. I can always come back and play the pick five. With this mandatory payout, I think I would place a little bit more of a premium on trying to be alive as it moves forward. And the race it will move forward to is the Grade 3 Go for One. This one we might be able to do very quickly in the interest of time. If you guys see it the way that I see it, JK will keep it with you.
I mean, I saw the horse in the race. I saw 3-5, and I thought, oh, okay, great. Who am I going to beat with? And I'm like, ah. And I couldn't really find anyone that like moved my soul. Look, Spice Perfection from a pace standpoint looks to be a little bit loose. Has races in the last race, the pace figure suggests this one will be loose. It's a Peter Miller horse coming out to the East Coast. I'd imagine they'll be forwardly placed. I don't see a reason why they would want to rate this one. And then if you think about what happened two races back, which kind of got Spice Perfection on people's Breeders' Cup list, was, you know, how she kind of broke slow at Keeneland and made that furious run. I mean, that you're going to have Javier's attention to make sure that doesn't happen again. Even more reason to suspect she'll be forwardly placed, take advantage of her pace advantage here. I she's the most likely winner. Another Broad makes sense to me as well. Has a nice figure last time and, did have a good trip. So she's one I might consider, but it feels like Spice Perfection is going to win this race.
EB, how much of your play in here will go through Spice Perfection?
I agree. I think there's not a lot of speed in here, so I think she could get loose. And everyone knows the loose lead's the most dangerous thing in racing. Might save up using it all here. I don't hate the all button like Jonathan does, but I think I think she's hard to beat here. Figure wise, doesn't stand as a monster, but from a class perspective and what she's done, I think she should win.
Well, if we had more time, I'd talk to you about how you would construct your wagers where you could have, I'm assuming what you mean is to have a small percentage of the money you put through the race with those long shots and then a much greater portion of it singled to the big favorite. It's an interesting idea we haven't really talked about on here. We don't really have time to delve into it today, but we'll put that on the list of things to come back at you with the next time you're on the show. And in the meantime, let's move on to race number 7. We've got 2-year-old maidens going 6 furlongs on the dirt. EB, where are you going to go here?
Races like this make me not want to play jackpot force out sometimes because there's not a lot of information out there on a lot of these horses. And it's kind of a crapshoot. You don't know what you're really going to go off of. But from a first glance, the Dermot Magner horse, Trash Talker, has experience in this race, decent figures. I'm just giving out chalk, but Trash Talker seems interesting. And from an other perspective, this based off the sequence today, I do think this is a race where you could probably spread a lot here because given the Spice Perfection single and some other races down the road, I think you can spread here and maybe get lucky in a race that doesn't have a lot out there.
You You never have to apologize to our listeners about giving out chalk. I'm bad enough, and then you've got our man JK over there who, you know, never met a favorite he didn't like. Chalk-sucking weasel himself. JK, have you ordered your t-shirt yet, by the way?
I haven't. I'm going to, though. The chalk-eating weasel. Oh, I don't know where you got the sucking of the chalk from. That seems so much more... podcast after dark, but
it's I think it's, you know, weasels, don't they, like, they kind of, I don't know, they suck eggs or something. I don't know, let's just leave that alone. Who do you like in this two-year-old maiden that goes as the seventh on Saturday?
I'm fast forwarding to, let's see, what time is this race at? I'm fast forwarding to 2:43 p.m. on Saturday, and any of these horses winning aren't going to be a shock to me, right? Bill Mott with the first on the rail gets out of there, gets on the lead, wins. Dermot's other horse. Jonathan Thomas, first time. You know, the Mark Hennig horse that took a little bit of money that's well-bred and with Into Mischief. Yeah, I'm going to try to use as many horses in this leg as I possibly can because I'm going to be spread everywhere else. It won't be the all button because there's certain horses that I refuse to use. Like, you know, I'm not going to use... I probably won't use like the David Donk horse, right? I don't need him. I don't necessarily need Fortune Found, but I'm going to get as close as I can to the all button because I'm going to be skinny in other places. This is a very, very tough race. And there's a lot of opportunity here, I think, for horses to be bet and to be overbet. Like, I feel like Dermot's horse, Trash Talker, will be overbet just because he's got the two figures, but he still hasn't crossed the line first, right? So I feel like there's an opportunity to make some money with some of these firsters while everyone's going to gravitate towards Trash Talker because he has form.
I will just mention two. Hedonistic is one that has a few of my pet angles. I love a horse that was bet and then got bumped. In other words, the wagering suggested the horse had speed but then wasn't necessarily able to show it. A lot of times they come back and they've got a lot more speed. The reason why they were bet the first time. I also like the fact that there's an overproducing dam here. 6 winners from 8 starters, including a couple at 2 years old. And, I mean, I'm not telling you anything that anybody can't see immediately, really, but I'm not getting beat by Engelhart Uncle Mo first out, just as well as all those Engelhart horses tend to run first out. And being by Uncle Mo 2.0 will take money, but it's just is one that I will, if I do something spready, I'll do a little extra with that one. I don't want to be on the wrong side of 2.0 in this spot, but generally speaking, I agree with everything y'all are saying. And with that, we'll move on to the Grade 2 Demoiselle. JK, we're going to pass the ball back to your court.
Well, you're culturally appropriating. You just said y'all, so I want you to apologize for that first.
I apologize to the South. I didn't know what I was saying. I should have gone with the Brooklyn version, which is use.
I only need 2 horses here. 2 horses on paper and 1 horse in my heart. Okay, so the in my heart horse, I'll use the B horse's Critical Value. I think she's, you know, our buddy's a 10 strike, and she's, you know, she's done nothing wrong. And she's, you know, and Marshall, we'll have Marshall on one day to tell the story. I'll leave it to him. But she wasn't thought to be much and ended up being a New York Brit Stakes winner for them. So a great story for her. I think she's going to find deeper waters here. Alondra is a horse that when she won on debut, spending some time down on that rail for Shug at Saratoga, you knew she was a real horse. She ran into British Idiom. She ran into a short stretch, and she ran into a bad trip where she was way too far back on a slow pace. So I think she should be dangerous. And then 12 Lake Avenue, I think that horse is one that could be freaky good. Ran huge last time, second time out for Bill Mott, ran well first time out. Those are the only two that I need, Alondra and Lake Avenue. And I'll have a little saver on Critical Value if the boys from 10 Strike can get the job done.
EB, how do you see it?
I agree with that. Pretty much everything JK said. I think Daphne Moon is interesting for Mr. Engelhart. Not exactly the easiest trips in both of her races. I think she'll stretch out. I'm not 100% sure, but I'd like to see it 8-1. The other one I thought was interesting was Maydeen from Mark Hennig. I think he's been going well lately. And one of my favorite angles for two-year-olds is two-year-olds that can pass other horses. especially mostly earlier in the year, but horses that actually show ability can close, and not necessarily, I don't know if they're speeding up or what, but they've got the ability to pass horses, and I value that a lot. And based off her win in the Tempted, I think she's pretty live here.
I'll go very quickly. You know, I've talked about Alondra as my Oaks filly. JK made all the specific points. Alondra's one I really, really like in this spot. And Critical Value will be on tickets, not just sentimentally, but one thing I like, you notice a lot of these Engelhardt horses, they, and if you look at the numbers, it's borne out by this. They tend to arrive fully formed. They don't necessarily improve their figures or the winning percentage from first start to second start the way you expect horses to. This one, Critical Value, defies that stat and looks to be improving all the time. And just a little bit more improvement could get on the board or even in the winner's circle here. So those are the two I like the most, and I'll try to work in EB and JK's runners as savers. And with that, we'll move on to the boys' version of this race. It's the Remsen. EB, who do you like in here?
Forza D'Oro. My friend Pete, the mailman, or ex-mailman, now works for the company with the letters. says this is his big bet on the day. He's going to be, I forgot to sign for the Naira contest yesterday, but he says this will be his big bet of the day, and I fully agree with him here. On debut, Forza D'Oro had probably a pretty rough trip, comes out next out and does a job, looked pretty strong, going a mile and a 16th at Belmont. I agree. I think he'll be the one to beat here, but it would not shock me if a lot of these stretching out to 9 furlongs at 2 turns for a lot of these horses.
I want a lot of coverage in here as well. I'll get to some of my ideas if JK doesn't cover them. JK, where are you in the Remsen?
Yeah, I'm using that one as well. I'm going to spread a little bit here. I think Chase Tracker makes sense, putting the blinkers on. You know, it's Todd Pletcher, and Todd has reminded us recently that he can still train horses. Winning the Breeders' Cup Classic with Vino Rosso. Cleon Jones could get the job done. Ajaweed. I mean, there's a bunch in here. Alpha 66. I'm going to use as many as I can. And the reason being is that a lot of these are going to be trying something for the first time, going that 9 furlongs as a 2-year-old. I think it takes kind of a, I don't want to say a special horse, because I don't think it takes a special horse. I think it takes a unique horse. I think this trip at this time of the year, based on everything that's happened in these 2-year-olds' careers to get to this point, they've obviously shown some ability going shorter, and now they're being asked to go the 9 furlongs. I just think that it's a tricky race that can lead to tricky results if you don't have a real speedy type that looks like they want the distance as well. So I'm going to use as many as I could. I've named most of the ones I'll be using. Informative for Uriah St. Louis is another one that I'll probably toss in there, stretching out for the first time.
I'll underline what you said about Chase Tracker. I think the trip should work out well. I don't usually like blinkers on in a graded stake, but I think in this case it's just going to suit the shape of the race so well. I respect what Eric was saying about Forza D'Oro. One other fuzzy I'll throw in is Shotsky, the 6 here, with Saez up and the best pace figures early. You know, with a lot of questions about who can get the distance, I see a world in which Saez is allowed to be aggressive on the lead. That one at what I imagine will be a very big price in a race without a lot of speed and with a lot of questions about distance. I'm not getting beat by Shotsky. So this will be one where there'll be certain lines of the bet where I try to drill down into those couple at the top of the market, and then we'll have another, you know, maybe even half my action spread around a number of them. And for me, the most interesting fuzzy is the aforementioned Shotsky.
Who gets a lead here? Shotsky?
I think so. JK?
Yeah, especially with Luis Saez. Whenever you're in doubt, if it's close, then you always, you know, I always err on the side of Louis. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe Chase Tracker could get the lead. You got Javier on the rail adding blinkers. You don't necessarily add blinkers and then take back, especially from the rail. That, you know, when you don't want to get into a situation, I think maybe he could be aggressively ridden from the inside. Todd Pletcher horses usually break well. I mean, I know that sounds a little bit funny, but going a mile and an eighth, this horse is going to break just fine. You know, maybe not the 5.5 at Saratoga. There's been some issues, but this horse will break fine going a mile and an eighth.
Taking Forza D'Oro, get the leader, be close. Broke slow in debut, but was near slower pace. But I think at some point, Junior's smart enough. I'm a card-carrying member of the Junior Alvarado fan club. I think he's smart enough to understand pace and times.
I'm glad you admitted it, because I was about to get you.
I mean, on pace figures, Forza D'Oro is last. I mean, I'm like looking at the time form pace projector, last through favors on or near early lead. So that would be a bit of a surprise to me, but, you know, there are a lot of different scenarios here. And I like the idea of Forza D'Oro as maybe the best one coming from off the pace. And then you play Chase Tracker and Shotsky, and you look to have the best of speed and the best closer in here. But we'll see how it all turns out. It's a very interesting handicapping puzzle, I think, when you put it all together. And hopefully we'll hit this race and we'll be alive for everything in the Cigar Mile. Kind of fun and different to have a nice grade one to close out this pick sequence. I guess we just were able to do it over at the Breeders' Cup, but day in, day out in New York, we very often have to deal with something of much lower quality to sweat in our last leg. It's great to have it be the Cigar Mile. You know what? It's so funny. I talked all week about got to sign up for the Naira Betts contest. I want to play in it, mess around with the interface. I knew it closed early. I kept telling other people, including JK, hey, remember, it closes early, and then promptly forgot. And I'm sorry. Yes, that's a user fail, but it's also a bit of a system fail. A little bit of free consulting for our friends at Naira. Gotta find a system that's better than having to sign up practically 48 hours in advance for these contests. You'll find the participation gets a lot better. Anyway, rant over. EB, who do you like in the Cigar Mile?
Do we have 2 minutes for a story quick about my love for Junior Alvarado?
Yeah, well, the time pressure was because of you. So if you have the ability to stick around, we can stick around.
All right. So we were at the Breeders' Cup in 2015 at the Village Idiot after, I think, Friday of racing.
The great Village Idiot.
So we're there, and Junior started his riding career in Chicago. So he was always a jock that was betting. Before I was really getting more in handicapping, he was a jock I was betting on because he was the best jockey there. I could run circles or ride circles around a lot of the jockeys there. He shows up to the Village Idiot, and I have one of the biggest fangirl moments of my life. Okay, so Cigar Mile. I think Splendor Run wins. No contest. Maximum security. I don't think the 42-second 3-furlong work is going to get him to be able to compete with Splendor Run off that excellent Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile win. I'll keep it short as that. Before I talked about how there's certain places where I can spread or use all here, it's because I think I'm just going to singling Splendor Run and go from there. I think he's the best, best in this race. I'm not a maximum security fan. Simple as that.
I'm concerned that Splendor Run has done so much in a short period of time, and looking at the way the trip is going to work out, I don't hold that slow work against maximum security. That's just service. That's just what he does. Like, we've seen that movie so many times where that there's no signal in the slowness of the workout.
I'm not saying that. I was saying that facetiously.
Okay. You were saying that. You're so dry. Your humor is so dry. It flew over my head there.
I've never seen a grade one winner who's last of the workout times for every race before. It's amazing. I love Splendor Run here. Maximum security. I don't necessarily agree with you on the races in a short amount of time for Splendor Run. He's had, what, 4 races since September?
I mean, for a modern thoroughbred, this will be number 5.
It's also Carlos Guerrero training, not Todd Pletcher.
Right? That's fair. I mean, it's just a little striking to see 19 days, 21 days, 21 days, 35 days. And it was just such a great, here's what I don't like. And we'll bring JK in here to get his thoughts on this, but I think it just benefited him so much to be able to get the lead. And to me, if nothing else, maximum security is going to get the lead. And that makes it hard for me to see Splendor Run's path to victory. It's hard for me to see him cracking maximum security and then having enough left. And I don't think he'll be in front of maximum security. So that's where my cognitive dissonance with Spunder Run is coming from. But, I mean, I'd love to see it. I love the story. I got to hang out with the horse and with Juan Carlos Breeders' Cup week, and they were very gracious at the barn. I did not bet the horse in the Breeders' Cup, but I was very happy for them to see that win. I'm nothing against the horse at all. I'd love to, as a story, I'd love to see him win. Just as a handicapper and horse player, I'm having trouble seeing how it's going to play out on the track. JK, what do you see here?
Yeah, you know, look, if I could sit down with Irad and Louie and, like, have a conversation and they would do exactly what I told them to do, then I feel like I could design the race for each of them to win. But not knowing what those guys are going to do and how they're going to be ridden, and sure, I mean, yeah, maybe Louie is going to send Maximum Security and put him on the lead, but maybe he breaks a step slow, or maybe Irad is intent on getting the lead again. Maybe they find out that's his secret weapon. Is getting on the lead, he runs better on the front end, and they don't believe that sitting off of Maximum Security, they'll pass him. So I just don't know how the race is going to unfold. There's too many questions. So for me, I want to be alive to both of them from a figure standpoint. They're faster than the rest. I tried to beat Maximum Security last time. He ran a nice figure that you would think he would improve off of based on the fact that that was simply a prep. This was the target. I just think that those two horses are both going to run their race. And I think it'll be a lot of fun when they turn for home. I'm not going to fall for Whitmore. Whitmore's tried kind of stretching out a few times and never with any success. I just don't think that he's the type of late running sprinter that I feel like his run gets dulled as they go longer. It's not an advantage for him to go longer. So those are the only two I need, Maximum Security and Spun to Run. If I were going to do anything outside of that, it would be looking at Bikinis, a horse that has always kind of been knocking on the door as being a good one. And this is going to be one of those races where I'll permanently divorce myself from him if he doesn't run better than he has been running. But I still think there's a good horse in there somewhere.
Eric, you let us know when you have to go, but there's so much to talk about still in this race. Personally, I'd be shocked if Maximum Security isn't on the lead here. It would take something like the horse just, you know, really not breaking well for that to be the case in the way that I see it run. For you, Eric, in your path to victory for Spun to Run, does he have to be on the lead, or can you see him stalking, taking over, and going on with it?
I think he gets an outside speed stalking trip. I don't know if he's speed or if he's going to stalk, but I've learned a lot from different people over time, you guys, Matisse brothers, but one of my favorite angles I've ever learned from Paul Matisse is the advantage that outside speed has over inside speed. And I understand Maximum Security has won being inside speed before, but I will take, if I'm preferring Spun to Run, which I just made all my cases for him to be the winner, I will take him drawn outside of Maximum Security 95% of the time.
We did get a question about this race and what happens if they hook up and who could the closer beneficiary be. I agree with JK about looking at Bikinis. I remember on the show after the first race at Saratoga, we disagreed, JK. You wanted looking at Bikinis to continue to stretch out. I was dying for the cutback at that point. I feel like this is a really good spot for this horse maybe to outrun the odds and at least get a piece. And who knows, if it starts to fall apart a little bit, I want to have at least a little bit of looking at Bikinis on top. And I also don't mind having a little bit of Tale of Silence here as a horse that could do some late running, that if this thing really falls apart, I think might be able to be there at the end. So Eric is kind of talking me into, my original opinion was to be more against Spun to Run, have plenty of Maximum Security, and then have a little bit with those two savers. It's a little hard to use both Maximum Security and Spun to Run in the picks, but I don't know. We've talked before about when you have a situation with big fields and takeout reducer in the form of this carryover that you can be a little more spready. I will try to have some sort of, you know, all A-line available still to cash with Spun to Run. How are you thinking about allocating your money in here, JK, percentage-wise, between the horses you see as the top contenders?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'll probably have Maximum Security and Spun to Run as A horses, and then a horse like looking at Bikinis as like a C. I don't want to have him as a B because I don't want to use, you know, if you're using the DRF ticket maker and you're kind of doing the full run, the A's and the two B's, it adds up.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you start doing the multiples. So I try not to use horses as default B horses just because they're next in line. If my A's are very strong, then I want to kind of skip that B line and kind of go to more of a saver version of the C ticket rather than spending a lot of equity on them taking up all those B lines.
And back to the pace question again, you think there's a world in which tactically Maximum Security will not be on the lead here?
Yeah, I mean, from a pace figure standpoint, I understand he's got all those ones, but from a pace figure standpoint, he doesn't have a race in his last 10 that early, outside of the Kentucky Derby, early that he's faster than Spun to Run's last race, you know? So if Irad Sins wants to go to the front, you know, and Louis knows that Maximum Security, he knows him well enough to know that he'll shut off and chase that horse from Parks, even though the horse won the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. But still, I don't think Louis has to be on the lead. I agree he probably will be, but I don't think he has to be on the front end.
Yeah, we're clearly looking at different pace figures. Time Form has him, you know, too clear, and he's drawn inside. So I would be surprised. But, I mean, you guys are bringing up a lot of great points that are making me definitely want to save a little bit when it comes to Spun to Run. All right. Eric, I know you've got a role. JK, why don't you stay around for a minute? We'll talk about some other stuff happening in the world. But Eric, thanks so much for your time today, and we'll get you back on soon to talk about a bunch of other stuff, unless you have a closing thought for us you want to share.
I've got nothing. I think we could probably sit down and talk not nearly as good of quality as the Benny Southstreet episode, but I think we could just sit down and talk about random racing stuff. I'm not an expert, but I think I've got some interesting opinions when it comes to wagering. In terms of format, some tools I built, things like that. But it was a lot of fun. I'll look forward to watching some racing on Saturday and from the cold Northwoods of Wisconsin.
I love it. All right, Eric, we will be talking soon. JK, where do you project to be playing from on Saturday? Did you get yourself involved in this Naira contest, or will you, like me, be watching from the sidelines?
No, I'm involved. I'll be probably doing a little couch action. Got a little birthday party in the middle of the day. These kids' birthday parties. Well, I tell you what, what's wrong with 10 a.m.? Why do we have to start? Why do we have to start during the pick five? or right smack dab in the middle of the LSU Georgia game?
Oh, that's amazing.
Clearly not sports fans, but anyways,
the game will not be on at the party.
I mean, I think it will be because it's at like this, like. You know, like entertainment deal where, you know, bowling and food and video games. So I'd imagine there's a round bar somewhere with TVs, but, you know, you can't guarantee it.
This is making me flash back to Perrin's birthday party 2 years ago when I blew the other parents' mind because they showed up at the play space, and I had sort of commandeered the front area and not only had a TV set up to watch whatever sports was going on, but had also brought a keg of beer. I was briefly a hero, JK, at that school.
Yeah, I mean, what's wrong with that? You're a grown up. You can have a beer if you want. Yeah, I've perfected some awkward race-watching moments in my life. You know, famously this year, I was watching I was watching the race where Hog Creek Hustle almost came down, and I had like a $20,000 bet in – or maybe it was $10,000, I can't remember.
The Belmont contest,
In the Belmont contest. And so right during my sister's vows, my dad and I were in the front row. sweating out the inquiry. So,
phenomenal.
You know, at least I was there.
Did you cheer at an inappropriate time during the ceremony? You know, like it could be like, could be all teed up. Like, does anybody have any objection? And you could be like, yes. And
yes!
That could have caused all,
yes!
could have caused all
no,
kinds
I didn't.
Of problems.
I didn't.
Fortunately, it did not, you did not embarrass yourself publicly that day. Anyway, what else is going on? You're going to be out at Arizona at the symposium next weekend. What's that all about? Or next week?
Next week, yeah. I'm on like a horse player customer kind of like a. It's. I think the vibe of the talk is knowing the customer better. And so it'll be myself, Pat Cummings, and Marshall Graham, which is a lot of fun for me because I'll let those two guys back up all of the anecdotes that, and like just thoughts that I have with numbers and facts, right? Like, I don't have to be the guy that has to like prove, like, if you do this, then, you know, you're going to see a 12% return and da-da-da. I can just
say, you guys should check this out. Yeah, no math required.
Let those guys handle that. So that should be fun. And I've never been before, so I don't know what other talks or conversations are going on. But I assume that I've always liked stuff like that, you know, conferences. And when I was coaching, we used to go to these coaching conventions. And, you know, at 10 o'clock, you could go listen to Chip Kelly talk about no huddle. And then at 11, you could go listen to Jeff Tedford talk about quarterback play. And I think if you can pick up one little small thing at any of these things, it could be the idea that revolutionizes what it is that you do. So I'm looking forward to just kind of sitting in on some things. A lot of times it's a lot of nonsense and a lot of stuff you might have already known. But like I said, those little nuggets, if you can grab those little nuggets, those are the things that can actually make a difference.
I think that's right. And the NHC is a bit like that, too. Not that there are formal presentations, but any kind of convention, if you can get one new idea. Sometimes if you really think about your life or you think about your horse playing, it's like that one idea could potentially unlock a massive score. And then, of course, it's not just the ideas that you get, it's the people that you meet. And anytime you can get like-minded individuals in a space like that, you're going to have the opportunity to make connections that can be life-changing. When I think about some of the, you know, random people I've met who had an impact on my life, including this, you know, one guy who sent me a fan letter a few years ago, and we ended up founding a couple of companies together.
I don't know if it was a fan letter. I think it was more of just like a, hey, what's up?
It was more. It was actually a very good question for discussion. I should go back and look, but it was, I think it was maybe you'd only played in Mythical Money and were playing Live Bank for the first time. It was actually a good question.
I think it was, I think I remember, I think it was the same, I might have caught, I don't want to break your heart, I need to look in my email. There's a possibility, I need to look this up, there's a possibility that the email I sent to you was also the same email that I sent to Nick Tamaro, but I might have changed like the first first two or three sentences to make them unique, but the rest of my, I need to look that up. That'd be great to crush your dreams.
That wouldn't crush my dreams at all. I'll write Nick Tamaro a fan letter, so there's no problem with that.
No, I think the question was
multiple entries. I think it was multiple
entries.
Yeah, you right. hadn't played multiple entries before. I think,
which is pretty funny, right? Like if you think about it, it's kind of funny that I was asking advice on multiple entries, and then
three months later, I've had the fun
multiple entries experience in my life before. So,
well, it just goes to show how I really deserve some credit for your putting two entries in the top 10. Of course, knowing what I know now, I would have given very different advice and said, had you separate those entries much earlier to try to maximize the chance of one winning, given how all the money's at the top in that contest. At the time, as a reporter, I was like psyched that it was like, hey, what a fun story. He could get two entries in the top 10. Now I realize you could make an argument it's a mistake to get two in the top 10. It shows you weren't playing aggressively enough. What do you think of that?
Yeah, you know what's funny about that is, and I think I've admitted this publicly before, and I know I have privately, like I got carried away and excited about getting two at the final table.
Right.
I wanted that to happen. Yeah. And in all honesty, in the grand scheme of things, it's probably worked out better for me in life that I did do that, right?
That's a good point. It was more of a story to have two in the top 10. Though, of course, if you could have won with the one you had, well, that would be a very different story.
Of course. But the other thing is I did not hit anything on day three. You know, the morning deal, I had had those two that had gone, and I just didn't really hit anything.
Right.
I think I zigged and zagged, you know, because I did split my tickets up. You know, I hit one here, one there. So they were both kind of climbing, but I never really had that run. And then I've said this before, too, where at the final table, if I would have been able to have both of my entries, I would have made a run at winning it because I was deciding on a down-the-hill turf race between a horse that Kent DeSormo was on and a horse that was a foal to Sydney's Candy named Sweet Swap. And I ended up picking the Sweet Swap horse. And then the Kent DeSormo horse, or maybe it was a Mike Smith horse, I can't remember, won at like 7-1. And that was the horse I would have picked if I wouldn't, you know, so if I would have had both, I would have picked that horse, and that would have made a pretty big difference, and here we go. But
well, the rules have been changed. Now one can put two entries to the final table. There is a Kinchin rule. I'm sure you're very happy to have that rule named after you. And you make a good point about everything that's happened since. You know, it's nothing to regret. It was just a little tangent to go on as we do have another.
You know, I actually had someone though, I had someone reach out to me recently. About how to, you know, about playing in a contest and they qualified their entry in, you know, and I said, well, are you going to play a second one? And they were like, well, I wasn't planning on it. And I was like, well, considering that the first one was free, if you really want to maximize your opportunity, then go ahead and grab the second one. A lot of people let that second entry debilitate them and their ability to work through it. But just if you're one of those people that you feel like that happens, then just have the second entry and pretend you don't even have it and just play the same on both and then split later when you need to.
That's a great point.
It just gives you more opportunities late. If you're someone whose mind, you can't wrap your brain around it. But I've played two entries. There's no right or wrong answer on how to play two entries. You play two entries on how the sequence lays out. If you don't have any opinions in the first six races, then you spread in those first six and then you find your best ticket and then you play your best horses on that one. If it's vice versa, if it's you have a bunch of opinions early, then you play all the same 7-8 horses on both entries, and then late when everyone's playing game theory and you're in 9th and 10th place, now you can split and play two horses in the last four races, and if you hit one of them, you'll win, right? Like those are the ways that you can do it. It just depends on the sequence. There's no right or wrong answer.
You're giving me good material for this new book I'm working on, JK. Hey, I've been kicking the tires on some titles. Want to hear them?
Let's do it.
So I was trying to play around with the idea of, you know, how in horse racing you only say, you'll frequently hear people say, but with heavy irony, it's an easy game. So I was trying to, like, play around with that and see if there could be a title in either easy game, not an easy game, a hard way to make an easy living. That's one that I think might have some potential. And then come up with a much more like declarative subtitle that could be something like, I don't know how many players are going to be interviewed, but so I'll just make up a number now. But 20 horse players talk about their methods and most memorable days at the track. Something like that. Do you think that any of those dogs hunt? You think I got to go back to the drawing board?
I was liking where you're going with easy game. I didn't like the one with living in it.
Okay.
And I like the track you're going. Oh, so here's just a brainstorming thing that I always give a disclaimer to people I'm brainstorming with. I like to say a lot of dumb stuff when I'm brainstorming that pops into my head because I think it inspires the other person to think about different things they weren't thinking about.
100%. So there's no wrong answers in brainstorming. You just want to get all your Legos on the table, and you're only going to use 3 of them, and there's going to be 17 of them that are just sitting there. But I think that's why we do pretty well brainstorming together, if I do say so myself, because we have the same attitude.
I think you want to. I think I like your idea of the title having a little sarcasm in it, and like painting this game as like. Painting this game in a light we know it's not, right? Like making it sound like it's the easiest game in the world and anyone can make money doing it when we know that in reality it's significantly much more difficult than that. But I think that it's funny if you do a title that pushes people along that way, like easy money. easy money. Never in doubt. something along those lines or if you can find, if you have that one great line from one of the stories in the book, you can make that line the title of the book. If there's that one just phenomenal line of someone's quote, you can make that the title of the book too.
I actually, with that in mind, I'm kind of feeling this easy game or easy money thing and declarative subtitle. We'll see. I have a boss to answer to on this one. We'll have to see what he has to say. But then I also recently bought a Charles Bukowski book that has a lot of racing in it. And I was thinking what you were just saying, that there might be some phrase in the Bukowski book that resonates that could be the title of this book. The Bukowski book I bought that has all the racing quotes in it is Tales of Ordinary Madness. Do you know anything about Bukowski? I think you're stuck on mute, but I'm guessing that the silence is your answer.
I got you. I mean, Bukowski. It sounds like a guy that plays defense for the Red Wings. I have no idea.
Who's delving into cultural stereotypes now? But he was he's a great story, actually. It was a postman for a number of years and a bit of a proper DG. Spent a lot of time at the racetrack, but became known as a poet, essayist, short story writer, thinly veiled short stories that were thinly veiled versions of his own life. But it's pretty gritty stuff, and it's not for everybody, and it's probably horribly politically incorrect in 17 different ways that somebody will want to cancel me for even trumpeting him on here. But I'm excited to – he's the kind of writer I haven't read in a long time, and I've often just read snippets and not whole books. But the fact that he spent a lot of time at Hollywood Park and made his living for a while at the racetrack means he's somebody I think could inspire, if not an entire title of the book, at least potentially give us some like quotes to lead chapters with or – you know, something. It's. I have a feeling I'll get something out of it, and it'll be well worth the $2.49 I spent to buy the old copy of the book. Anything else, JK? I think we can pretty much wrap. We do want to encourage people to also listen to our other shows this week. We've got an In the Ring Pedigree podcast going to be coming up where we talk with Debbie Easter about her role in Finite and the horse racing in Virginia. Sean Tugel will be on there. We'll take his temperature about where we are with this two-year-old crop. And then we're going to actually do the other races that we didn't already do on this Aqueduct card as part of our Naira Betts show. We'll do races 1 through 5 on there, so a little bit of overlap. That'll be lean and mean. I'm guessing that's going to be a 20-minute show, especially since we've stretched this one out to almost an hour. But anything else you've got on your mind?
No, I think that's it. Yeah, no. Looking forward to these mandatory payout days are the right word. I mean, I embrace them because they exist. I still think there's a better way we can do it, but I embrace them because they exist, and I embrace them because mathematically they make sense on the payout days. But I still feel like there's some, maybe that's something we can try to chat about and talk about this week when we're out in Arizona with some. The powers that be and the minds that be some different ways to go about this. We'll see what we can come up with.
And it's funny you mentioned that, and I talked about this on Steve Bick this week, but I'm working with John Camardo. After this mandatory payout, I feel like we're going to have enough information on the Empire 6 to really start delving into the numbers, trying to compare the way the economics of this bet work to the old Pick 6, and try to look at the numbers, not with a conclusion already made. Like you, my inclination is to not be in favor of these bets. But that said, I want to look at the data with an open mind and see if there aren't some conclusions to be drawn. And I'd be happy to work on something, whether it's for our friends at Thoroughbred Idea Foundation or maybe just something privately for our friends over at Naira to try to share some conclusions. And like you said, JK, try to come up or see if there is a better way to run these bets that might accomplish all the goals, including the marketing initiatives that they clearly are looking forward to and were frankly successful with at Saratoga. I think at Saratoga, the bet was pretty close to an unqualified success, I think you have to say. Since then, I'm not so sure. But like I said, we'll look into the numbers, see if we can make some recommendations and do our part to help out. We'll have a bunch more interview shows soon. We're going to have some more question and answer shows soon. Make sure you use the hashtag AskITM for all that stuff. All right, we're going to give JK a little break. We'll have him back for the end credits, but using the magic of audio, I want to drop in a short segment here about some other really interesting racing happening this weekend, talking about the international races in Hong Kong. And to talk about them with us, I want to bring in our correspondent. She does all things international and also domestically here in the USA. Currently, she is in the Netherlands, but I think she wishes she was in Hong Kong right about now. Naomi Tucker, how you doing?
Hi, Pete. I'm good. How are you?
Things are very good. wrestling with some technology, dealing with some low fidelity on the shows this week, but we're going to be back to our high fidelity standards next week. I wanted to get you on to talk about these races because I know they've become of interest to many horse players, and I know Hong Kong is a place you've spent some time and that you're very interested in as well. In general, will you be watching and betting on these races?
I will be watching indeed. Not really sure I can bet on Hong Kong races in the Netherlands, but I'm definitely going to try, and I absolutely wish I was out there because this is their highlight of the season. This is their crescendo. This is, you know, they call it the turf championships of the world. So this is, I wish I was there.
It does sound like a good time. We'll talk to you more about your Hong Kong experience. Given the limited time we have today, we're going to dive right in because I know a lot of USA players will be following this. If you're on the East Coast, it requires staying up late. It's a bit more civilized on the West Coast. Things start, the big races that we're going to be talking about start with race 4. These races are happening Saturday night into Sunday. So 12:40 a.m. will be the Hong Kong Vaz on the East Coast. That's, of course, 9:40 p.m. on the West Coast. This one is a mile and a half on the turf. Naomi, what are the big storylines heading into this year's Hong Kong Vaz?
So in Hong Kong Vaz, there's a couple of incredibly interesting horses, but the first one I'd like to talk about would be last year's winner, Exultant, who last year had this incredible battle with Liz Grasho, who then went on to win the Group 1 Cox Plate in Australia. And then fifth in that race was this year's Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe upset, Waldgeist. So he's an incredibly interesting horse to keep your eye on. He came back this season because the Hong Kong season is slightly different. His last race was a very nice win in the Group 2 Jockey Club Cup. So he really seems to be on his game. And this race, it doesn't seem to be like there's a lot of pace, and he's quite a handy runner. So I think that would very much suit him. But the horse that I want this race to go to is Anthony Van Dyke, the Epsom Derby winner, the only Derby winner to ever contest the Hong Kong Vaz for the Maestro Aidan O'Brien. So he's coming here off the back of that third in the Breeders' Cup turf, where he did get a little bit of trouble in running. So I'm hoping that Ryan Moore can keep him out of trouble this time here. He's shown that he suits firm ground, which is most likely going to be the ground at Sha Tin Racecourse on Sunday. And he's getting blinkers on. So I very much would like to put him on top here. And then the last horse I think everyone should keep an eye on is Deirdre, who's the Japanese incredibly tough female contender, has English champion jockey, well, he's Irish, but English champion jockey, Ashin Murphy on board. She won the Group 1 Nassau in the UK. She comes here, you know, having traveled the world, she's shown an incredibly strong piece of work. That's sort of what the Japanese do out here. They come and they have this incredible, quite often a blowout on the Wednesday or even the Thursday, and really rip up the track. And that's exactly what she did. So I think she'll be one to keep an eye on too.
Many, including me, thought Anthony Van Dyke might have gotten the spoils that day in the Breeders' Cup turf with a clean run through. Will be very interesting to see what he can do over there. Let's move on to race number 5. It's the Hong Kong Sprint going 6 furlongs. Who do you like in here, Naomi?
So this is by far the deepest race of the day. This is an incredibly tough race to dissect. You know, you kind of want to, I don't know, pick out 3 horses that you're going to follow, but looking at this race, I basically ended up on 5 horses, but I won't try and name them all. But it's technically going to be Athero, which is the John Moore young 3-year-old sprinter that has really basically upset the standard order here in Hong Kong with his last win in the Group 2 Jockey Club Sprint. He did get a lot of weight there. He's a Southern Hemisphere 3-year-old. So in that race, he only carried 113 pounds, which was 10 pounds less than Hot King Prawn, who's opposing him here, and 15 pounds less than Beat the Clock. Now, he's going to have 9 pounds less than Beat the Clock in here, but he's only going to have, well, he's going to also have 9 pounds less than Hot King Prawn. So it's going to be incredibly tricky. And then there's other form lines that come into play. For example, In Her Time is a dual Group 1 winner coming in from Australia, Brenton Abdullah on board. She had this incredibly top level wins, but she returns here obviously after a really good win at Lightning Stakes, and she has this deadly turn of foot. And I do think that the Sha Tin straight really plays to that. It's about 430 meters, so there's plenty of time for horses to really do come in with that closing speed. And then you have Dannon Smash with the Tory on Butch. You never underestimate Frankie Dettori coming here on the international stage. So it's going to be a very, very tricky race. I put Athero on top because he's the one to beat, basically. He's the recent holder of the 1,000-meter track record here at Sha Tin. But he is going to be vulnerable here.
It sounds like a competitive affair, that's for sure. One to keep grinding on. We're not going to talk about the sixth race. We'll move on to race number seven as the purses get higher. Hong Kong Mile, $3.2 million in U.S. dollars on the line. Beauty Generation seeking to win this race for the third year in a row. Is it as simple as Beauty Generation in this year's Hong Kong Mile?
I'm afraid it's not going to be as simple. Yes, he's going for that third win. He is being sent out by John Moore, who has won this race four times before with three different horses, including the mighty Able Friend, who was once ranked as the best, how do you call it, the Longines World Best Racehorse ranking. He was the highest rated horse in the world. But Beauty Generation, being two-time Hong Kong Horse of the Year, he's a two-time record holder here at Sha Tin as well, over the mile and over 2,200 meters. But he's lost that sense of invincibility that he had before, because this season coming back, he's placed third twice. So he seemed, you know, he's getting older. He's a seven-year-old now, and it seems to be, you know, coming some kink in his armor there. And then you have another Japanese. I really do think the Japanese contingent here at the Hong Kong International Races this year is extraordinary. I actually think that they've got one of the strongest hands they've ever had. There's been three Japanese horses that have won this race, the Hong Kong Mile, so far. And I really think that Indy Champ can be the fourth one to do it. He's a two-time Group 1 winning miler in Japan. And his last, well, not his last, but his first Group 1 win was in the Yasuda Kinnan. And he actually beat this year's 2019 Dubai Turf Victors and female Triple Crown winner Almond Eye in this. Now, she did get a bit of trouble in that race. She did get out late, but still it's quite a defeat to have on your resume. And he really has this incredible quickness that you're looking for in turf races, really the ability to quicken in those last two furlongs, like most turf races that run. So I think he, in my opinion, is the one to beat in this race.
Let's close things out with an analysis of race number eight, the Hong Kong Cup, mile and a quarter on the turf once again. Who's it going to be in here?
So I'm going to be very biased here. The Hong Kong Cup was going to be Almond Eye's race, but unfortunately she's spiked a fever, so she's not traveling over from the land of the rising sun. But we have Magic Wand here coming off the back to her first ever Group 1 win in the McKinnon Stakes over 2,000 meter at Flemington. And she's had, I do believe, 16 Group 1 starts of 11 places. So she's as tough as they can get. She won her first Group 1 off the back of a Melbourne Cup run 4 days before. So this means that she now has had a month to recover. And I do actually think that this race will perfectly set up for her as well. There's a couple of horses that could easily go to the front in here, such as Time Warp and Glorious Forever. And I think that gives her the chance to get into that box seat like she did in the McKinnon and really just sort of cruise in of a nice lead and be quite tough to catch.
I like that description. I like that idea. I'm going to be staying up late, I think, Saturday night here in the USA. With the time differences, I'm trying to think. It's a little bit more civilized for you. You'll just get up early?
Yeah, I'm going to get up early. I'm going to have a look at this because this is definitely something that you don't want to miss. Now, I do have to mention there's a couple of other, like I said before, a Japanese horse in here, Wind Bright, who really could actually have a strong chance as well, because he beat Exultant in the QE2 Cup this year, which was a career best performance. So if he comes back on that level, he's going to be a tough one. But then you have a local contender for Caspian Fowles in Rise High, who could actually be the upset as well, because he was touted as being the next big Hong Kong horse. So it's going to be very intriguing.
Lots of possibilities. Your ADW is probably carrying this if you're listening to this in the United States. Of course, if you're listening internationally, you know, more civilized ways to bet, like fixed odds potentially. But we should be having access to this tote pool through most of the USA ADWs. We encourage folks to check it out. Competitive racing, lots of superstars, horses who could end up coming back over this way in the USA at some point too. You never know. I wouldn't be surprised if Deirdre ends up making a tilt at the Breeders' Cup, for example, next year, depending on how things go and what connections decide to do. Naomi, thank you for that analysis. We're eager to get you back in the USA. We're eager to get you back on these shows doing some interviews in the next few weeks. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and let's see how it all pans out.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the In the Money Players podcast. I want to thank JK. I want to thank our friend Eric Bylick. Really looking forward to hanging out with him in Vegas. Hasn't it felt like something was missing the last couple of years, JK, without EB out there?
Yeah, the last time he was in Vegas, he was on the muscle, too. I don't know if he had too much coffee, or he was an absolute runoff. I mean, we had to... Golly, Nick Tamaro had to go left-handed a few times on him. He was on the muscle. So hopefully we'll have to give him some ace or something.
please don't tell me that's what you were considering dosing my beer with that day at Lucky Baldwin's.
Hey, you were on the muscle too. You might just need to be turned out.
I haven't gotten sour, believe me. I've been in the trenches grinding, the opposite of sour. But anyway, thank both of you guys. Thank Naomi Tucker. We're going to thank our sponsors, including Stats Race Lens, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, of course, 10 Strike Racing. Godspeed to them this weekend. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Cotney. I still think he exists. I haven't talked to him in about 3 weeks, but I believe he's out there. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kitchen. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos. Hey, everybody. Just wanted to give a word for our latest partner, Stats Race Lens. This is a product that is definitely worth checking out. You can even get discounts if you use the promo code StatsITM. We're talking about customizable PPs with comprehensive research abilities, video replays, advanced search and notifications, access to stats true odds, handicapping angles, and back testing. That's what Scott Coles used to help him win the NHC this year, and he's talked about on this show. It's mobile and tablet friendly. Stats Race Lens, bringing clarity to handicapping. And make sure you use the promo code StatsITM. STATSITM.